At 11 p.m., a pale blue Lincoln Continental shut off in the porte cochere of one of the dark, fat plantation estates in Nashville's Belle Meade section. Terrell climbed heavily out of the car, paused like a thoughtful animal in the porch light, then disappeared into his house. Bright lights flashed on in several rooms on the ground floor level. They mapped his route through the big house. The final light was the desk lamp in Terrell's study. Terrell sat down in a worn easy chair. He slid off his black patent leather loafers, loosened his belt, thought about this Thomas Berryman character for a moment. He thought about the lawyer, Harley John Wynn, too, about his murder somewhere up in New York. Then he made a phone call to New Orleans. The man Terrell spoke to in Louisiana had a fast, nearly unintelligible drawl. "This Berryman, the one who does the drownings and heart attacks?" he wanted to know. "This Thomas Berryman you yapping about, Mr. Terrell?" "Thomas Berryman," John Boy said. "But I believe he'll be using a gun this time. That's the impression I got. I had a nice little talk with the man. Southern boy, you know."
During the next few minutes, the details of a contract on Thomas Berryman were arranged. A mob killer would probably be used. He was to be paid in full, regardless of what happened to Jimmy Horn.
"Your nigger is Thomas Berryman's responsibility,"
the New Orleans man made very clear.
"He's the hot shit. My man's fee will be 10. He's light. He's mob." "By the way, Mr. Terrell," the New Orleans man quit before he hung up, "this is turning into a real public service number for you, isn't it?"
After Terrell hung up, the New Orleans man called first New York, then Philadelphia. The name Joseph Cubba was brought up during the Philadelphia call. Nashville, July 1. An attempt on Horn would have been made on Sunday night. An attempt was made. At about 7:30, Santo Massimino was studying 10 Jimmy Horns on videotape monitors, and he was liking all of them. The young media flash was stalking Tennessee in a World War II flight jacket and ice cream store pants. He was a New York hippie, but a serious, wooden-faced one. He was also one of America's finest salesmen, right up there with Arthur Godfrey. Massimino's secret was to talk fast, make as little real sense as possible, and give people absolutely no chance to consider what he was saying. "Jimmy Horn has a news commentator's face," Massimino was thinking to himself. It was a good TV face. It filled up the gray screen in a nice way and made you feel pretty good about politics, about life in general. That was the way Horn would be merchandised. Massimino walked away from the monitor horns and called out in the direction of the real McCoy. "No way, Thirsty," he called. "Take the mic off his tie. We'll go with the offstage mic." Jimmy Horn was being prepared for a half-hour TV broadcast at 8. Thurston Fry, a long-haired station hand, finished nailing down an apple-red carpet around Horn's armchair. Then he gingerly picked the microphone off the mayor's silk tie. Meanwhile, Horn's appointment secretary was reading him a riot act fact sheet by way of prepping him for the TV show. Off to one side, Horn's best friend, Jap Corey, sipped Navy coffee on a couch used on the noon local TV show. 10-year-old Keisha Horn was with him. Little boys were already taking after-school jobs to raise money to take pretty Keisha to movies like Superfly and Claudine, except that lately she'd had to go to movies and even to school with a policeman. Quarry suddenly roared out cruel laughter. The welfare worker stomped over to Jimmy Horn on big orange work boots. He presented the mayor with the styrofoam coffee cup he'd just drained. He shook his head sadly. "Elect Horn Senator" was printed on the cup's inside bottom.
"Such bullshit, man," Jap Corey said. Pure, 100% pure bullshit, Jim."
"Television and radio commercials," the appointment secretary read on from the fact sheet, "are just extensions of the whistle stop."
100% pure, Jim. How much do you want it?"
A makeup man put a touch of light pancake on the mayor's chin, then he wiped it off. Santo Massimino stood jabbing a rich ward chairman named Heck Worth in the cowboy shirt. I want you to personally take full responsibility for the busing of the Nashville Technical and the Nashville Pearl High School marching bands," he said to this man, who had made $1 million out of mere apple cider. A sound man crept up alongside the makeup man and started to whisper to the mayor, "I need a level on you, Mayor."
"I cannot stand this confusion and noise," the mayor said to him.
"Thank you."